Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Today's podcast is all about Cab Franc, baby. If you are listening to this podcast, you know that Cab Franc is my passion. I created Cab Franc Day back in 2015. That first year, I hosted a Twitter chat and could not believe my eyes when I saw it trending on Twitter, just behind Cookie Day. Well, you know, it is kind of tough to beat a cookie. Since then, my holiday has made it international. It is celebrated across the globe, and I have no idea how it happened, but sometimes you don't need to know the why, you just need to be happy with it. Several regions have since named Cab Franc their flagship grape, including Villeney, Hungary. You can listen to several podcasts and read my blogs about my trip there, and the Hudson Valley, which is the focus of this podcast. The Hudson Valley Cabernet Franc Coalition is a group of Hudson Valley winery owners, grape growers, winemakers, and wine industry supporters committed to establishing a Cabernet Franc brand identity for the Hudson River region. They had a barrel tasting event at the end of May, and I was more than happy to take the drive up to meet the people behind the wineries that came together for their love of Cab Franc. So I am speaking with Bruce Tripp and Ed Evans of Malaya Estate Vineyards here in the beautiful Hudson Valley. And where we are is at the Cab Franc Coalition barrel tasting event. And it's not a bad place to be. All right, so let's first introduce yourselves. Tell us, you know, a little bit about yourselves, how you got into the wine industry, and we'll go from there.
Well, my name's Ed Evans. I'm with Malaya Estate Vineyard. I started out as a caretaker on a farm, and we put in a little vineyard. I knew nothing of grapes. We needed help, so we brought on Bruce Tripp, who is our winemaker. And this was back in 13, 14,
something like
that. Our first vintage was 15, and we've been steadily progressing since with Bruce's tutelage and Barry's land.
All right, so you guys are kind of young in the wine
well,
industry.
Well, I am. I was, like everybody, a backyard beer maker, and I was told I was going to make wine. So luckily Bruce was around to lead me on, and one thing led to another, and here we are today.
Yeah, I led him on.
You twisted the arm hard,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
So, Bruce Tripp, Malaya Estate Vineyard. I've been kicking around the wine industry for quite a while, making wines professionally for about 10 years. Before that, it was a hobby run amok.
As most of us in the wine industry happen.
And, you know, put in a small vineyard at my own, at my house, and really learned the ropes the hard way. You know, I struggled with growing grapes until I figured it out. Fortunately, about that time when I had a pretty good handle on it, that's when the opportunity came with Ed and with Barry, and kind of that's how we kicked it all off. Yeah.
So how did you guys run into each other, or have you known each other for a while?
A mutual friend. Basically, a good friend of mine is a beekeeper, and you know, at Barry's farm, they had some apple trees, and Ray, my friend, was, you know, bringing the bees in there, and he knew that they needed some help with the grape growing. So that's how we connected.
So when you planted your first vines, what were they?
First vines were four rows of Noiré and two rows of Traminette, which is right up Bruce's alley. And you wanted a couple reds, you wanted a white, and it went from there.
So why those varieties?
Well, I'm very partial to Traminette. I like the spiciness of it. I've loved Gewurztraminer, and of course, here's a a hybrid that almost as good as Gewurztraminer. So that's how we got started with that. And then of course, the true love is of course the Cab Franc and other vinifers as well.
So why do you think Cab Franc does so well here?
Well, it really comes down to the Hudson Valley being a world-class fruit-growing region. I mean, everybody knows of the apples, okay? But before the apples, there were grapes here. And you can go back to 1860, 1870, and look at the records of how many tons of grapes were shipped down to New York City. And those all got forgotten about. And it's just being rediscovered now in the form of things like Cab Franc. And it's, the maritime climate that the valley forms brings in that warm air from the Atlantic Ocean and basically keeps our grapes nice and warm through the growing season, but not too warm, so that we develop the flavors and the characteristics of the Cab Franc grape.
Okay, so in Paso, right, we have very hot days, but we have a huge diurnal shift at night. So that's what allows us to grow our fruit. On your end, you kind of stay constant during the growing season?
It's warm, but
Cool nights.
And really, you tend to, in the heat of the summer, you'll get those nice warm days. And then that cool night keeps that, keeps the acidity in the grape so that you can still get that balance of the fruit. So it's kind of like what you're describing.
So, as every winemaker knows, it takes a lot of good beer to make great wine.
Perhaps.
We spend a lot of time in breweries. So what is your favorite type of beer?
Me personally, I'm not too hoppy. I'm old school hop, simple IPA. I don't need 9-10 times. And then a nice stout every once in a while.
Amber?
An amber.
Really?
I love ambers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's maybe sometimes a brown, but sometimes it's really those porters and those ambers are really good.
So I had read a long time ago about a research study that says most winemakers go to IPAs. And it has something to do with the palate of tasting the wine and going to IPAs. And I asked that question a lot, and I got to say, you're the first person who has said amber.
Well,
that just makes you unique.
He's a trendsetter.
There you go. So just let everybody know, where can they find you guys online? Are you available anywhere in stores? Tell us about how my listeners can get to you.
Well, we're local, Rhinebeck. You'll find us in Rhinebeck Wines and Liquors. We're up in Red Hook in the Grog Shop, Terrapins, Viscount.
Dutchess County, we're quite well represented. We're a little bit into Ulster County. And we get quite a following, especially at the festivals, with people coming out of either the city or out of Westchester. And matter of fact, we just did an event up in Chatham, New York, and we're starting to get a little draw from up in the western Massachusetts and in the Albany area. So we're starting to get known.
That is good. What about on social media?
Well, we're at malayastatevineyard.com. We're old school. We're still paper and pencil, so we need... Somebody asked about Instagram.
Yeah.
We need to get on the ball with that. But
you do need to get on the ball. That's one of the hats
we don't really...
We are on Facebook.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, Ed and others post a lot of photographs on Facebook, especially with our tasting room about to open this summer.
That's right.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and we're quite excited about that, especially being with our proximity to the Taconic Parkway. It's an easy drive up out of the city or Westchester, and of course, a beautiful setting to just sit back and enjoy a nice bottle of wine.
Awesome. So what is your total case production now?
Right now, we're doing about 1,800 cases a year.
Oh.
So it's a fair amount and growing.
Right. Well, that's a quick grow. That's a quick grow.
Yeah, we went from 400 in 2015, and now 1,800 in 2018.
That's a scary thing. That's awesome,
you
though.
You don't have to tell us.
Yeah.
It's daunting.
Yeah. It's the feeling is like so, like it's a roller coaster. Like you're like, yes, I'm tasting room. Yes, I'm increasing my production. And then, oh my God, I've increased my production. I've got to sell this wine. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. The tasting room will help.
When you go into the warehouse and you look at stacks and stacks of bottles and, you know, filled bottles, and you're like, how the heck are we going to sell all this wine? And then at the end of the year, well, that wine's gone.
So, and you're like, damn, I just gonna say, damn, now I've got to fill this all back up.
Exactly.
Right. Well, excellent. Thank you very much. Well,
thank you for your time.
I look forward to tasting your wine.
It's a
thank
pleasure.
You.
Very well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am now with Bruce Kimball of Millbrook Winery, and my first question is, tell me a little bit about yourself.
I started out, I graduated from SUNY New Paltz, did my undergraduate and graduate work there, was an educator for 33 years, and after retiring from being an educator, I went to work for Millbrook Winery, doing tours, tastings, and part-time manager.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of fun because I went there to do a tasting one day with my sister, and I love their wine, so I'm doing a tasting, and I get finished with the tasting, and the person doing the tasting happened to be manager and said, do you want a job? And that's how I wound up at Millbrook 15 years ago.
And it was perfect timing? You had just retired from teaching?
I had retired about 2 years earlier. Yeah.
Oh.
So it was perfect.
See, the stars were all aligned.
Everything lined up for me. It was perfect.
Perfect.
So I've been here. This is my 15th season there.
Okay. So I am actually an educator. That's the job that pays for the winery.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And I have 2 more years left before I get to do my winery full time.
Okay.
And I will be in California, and I have the countdown on my phone on how many days are left. So tell me a little bit about Millbrook Winery.
Okay, Millbrook Winery is owned by John Dyson, a name New Yorkers might know. John was Commissioner of Commerce for the state of New York back in the 1970s. He is actually the guy, working with an artist named Max Glazier, created the I Love New York logo and I Love New York campaign. He also served as Commissioner of Agriculture, head of the Power Authority, and Deputy Mayor for Finance of the City of New York. But in addition to being a public servant, John's a real wine connoisseur. And back in 1979, he bought Wing Farm in Millbrook, New York. So we started growing 79-80, and it takes about 5 or 6 years for the vines to mature enough to produce a wine-quality grape. So our first vintage was 1985, and we've been making wine since 85. What else would you like to know?
So 1985, so tell me about a little bit about the Hudson Valley. Is Millbrook one of the older wineries
it's
in the region that's
the
still
older,
here?
But it's one of the larger and also has a really great reputation. I mean, we've won all kinds of gold medals and things like that. We grow a number of different varietals there. We're actually the majority, not the majority, about a third of what we grow there and make there are Chardonnays, and we make about 6 or 7 different Chardonnays. We make Cabernet Francs, we make Grüner Veltliner, we make Rieslings, we make Pinot Noirs. But John also owns 2 other wineries. One is in Tuscany in San Gimignano. It's called Villa Pilo. Beautiful estate there. I was just there last year, and they produce some very nice Tuscan wines. He also owns another a winery and vineyards in California, in the Russian River Valley in Sonoma. But Millbrook, I'm going to talk about Millbrook because that's where I work. we're probably best known, our best selling wine is actually our Chardonnay, but my personal favorite is the Cab Francs. That's why I'm here today, is because I'm doing the Cab Francs. And we make 3 different Cab Francs there. We make a proprietor special reserve Cab Franc, which currently is 95% Cab Franc, 5% Merlot, aged in neutral French oak barrels for anywhere from 15 to 18 months. Okay. Really nice, beautiful, herbaceous flavors, nice, rich flavors. Maybe not for everybody. It's a certain taste. You know, some people like, some people don't. But to me,
that's with every wine.
Absolutely, absolutely. Millbrook, we don't make sweet wine there, so we frequently have people show up and be like, oh, don't you make this, that, and the other? But sorry, no, we make dry wines here. Now, because it's Cab Franc that we're doing today, I'm going to talk a little more about the Cab Francs. So we make the Pride of Special Reserve Cab Franc, which is 95.5. We make our PSR Cab Franc, I'm sorry, New York State Cab Franc, which is our basic Cab Franc. That's 75% Cab Franc, 25% Merlot. And then when we have a great growing season, we have something we call our Block 3 East. Now, Block 3 East is this little part of the vineyard with our oldest, like 40-year-old Cab Franc vines. And when we have a great season, like we did in 2014, we take grapes exclusively from there, and then we ferment them for 18 months in French oak. And that's beautiful. But that's one you have to have patience with. It needs to be aged. It gets better and better with age. Now, just before I came here yesterday, I stopped off at the winery, and John Graziano, who's our winemaker, he's been our winemaker since we started, John Graziano tapped into a barrel of our 2017 Cab Franc and just kind of siphoned some out. So I have three bottles of that with me today.
I better get some of that.
It is gorgeous. It is, and it's young. It's still young, but that's 100% Cab Franc. That will be released after the 2016 is done.
And that's from the your Block 3?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
We kind of were talking, and I know it's 100% Cab Franc, but it is exquisite, and it was really fun to be talking to Graziano, our winemaker, because he's like a little kid that he has just created something beautiful. And he has created something beautiful with that 2017 Cab Franc. I'm going to be doing in December an all Cab Franc wine and cheese tasting, because Cab Francs just pair well with really sharp cheeses. So I'm going to be doing an all Cab Franc tasting in December during Cab Franc week with like Asiago cheese and Manchego cheese, maybe some blue and some Stilton, something like
that. I'm going to give you a little tip. 1,000-day aged Gouda.
Gouda, okay.
It's got to be that 1,000, or it might be 999. It's an odd number. It's
okay.
An odd thing, but aged Gouda.
Really?
That is with Cab Franc.
Really?
I tell you.
Okay, I'll add that one on. Now, the thing that I love is I like to take Portobello mushrooms, and I dry them a little bit, and then I soak them in extra virgin olive oil, and then I stuff them with Manchego cheese and roasted red pepper. Pop them on the grill and serve a Cab Franc with that, and that is a really beautiful combination. It's something, you know, people think, oh, red wines, I have to have meat. What if I'm a vegetarian? No,
yep.
Have it with some mushrooms, exactly.
Yep, now Cab Franc is an amazing grape variety. It is so versatile.
Yep.
It can go from sitting on the patio to a barbecue to a full-out steak meal
yep.
to a delicate meal.
Yep.
To an elegant meal.
Yep. And the thing is, the Hudson Valley is perfect for growing Cab Francs. It's got the right soil. It's got the right climate. I mean, next to the Bordeaux region, it's probably the best place to grow Cab Francs. So we're going to compete with the Bordeaux region and the Loire Valley now.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go. Now, so would you say that your Cab Franc, and you have three of them, so it may be a little difficult to answer it, but, you know, there's two kind of pathways of Cab Franc. We
yep.
have the Loire Valley Cab Franc that is very Chenon, that is very bell pepper, that
yep.
has those pyrazines.
Yep.
And then we have more of the New World kind of connoisseur that's more, well, I don't really like that bell pepper. So I prefer the less pyrazines. And
I would say ours is probably more towards the Loire. And
okay.
it's got that really herbaceous flavors to it, which, again, some people like, some people
yep.
don't. Some people prefer that little more mellowness to it. I like the little zing there. And, again, if you do the PSR, the Pride of Special Reserve, it's going to have one kind of swing to it, whereas the Block 3 East is going to have different. Again, some people like one, some people
right.
like the other. The thing with the Block 3 East is it ages absolutely beautifully. So I've had people actually come in and they'll buy like a magnum of Block 3 East and say, oh, we just got married. We're going to open this for our 10th anniversary. That's really beautiful. And then I've had people, I'm not making this up, bought a magnum of Block 3 East when they had their first child, and it's going to be open when the kid turns 21.
Very nice.
I said, that's very nice. I don't like my son that much. I'm drinking
it. I'm going to drink it before he's 21.
I'll buy some more later.
are. So tell me, you had mentioned that you were doing the cheese for Cab Franc week, okay?
Yep.
What other specials, you know, I'm the founder of Cab Franc Day, so this is my baby here.
Yep.
What are you looking to do? Are you doing any other specials for a Cab Franc Day? Are they not quite in the works yet?
Not that I'm aware of. This is the one I know we're doing because I put the proposal together, submitted it to, you know, the bosses, and they said, let's go with it. But I don't think we've got anything else planned at this point in time.
Okay. And now just tell me, where can my listeners find Millbrook Winery? Are you, what's your website? Are you on social media?
Yep.
What can you do?
Google and look on it. We have a website. It's millwines.com. In fact,
Millwines, not Millbrook?
Nope. It's,
okay.
Oh, sorry. Millbrookwine.com.
Okay.
Yeah, right there.
All right.
And it's on Wing Road in the town of Millbrook. I'm actually the one who came the furthest distance to get here because we're in northern Dutchess County right near the, so we're pretty far away from here in terms of, you know, a lot of them are on this side of the river, we're on the other side of the river. But again, it's we've got perfect situation in terms of growing the Cab Francs up there. Again, it's not our best-selling wine. It's, to me, our best wine, not our best selling.
All right. And then did you tell any social media? Are you on Twitter, Instagram?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. All Millbrook Wine.
Facebooks and all that stuff like that. Yep.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
And I'm looking forward to tasting that special Cab Franc.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thank you. All right. So I am back, and I am now talking to Christoph. Brown.
Christoph Brown.
Okay, and he is the winemaker for both Robibero Winery and Glory Farm Winery. So first off, let's get a little bit of information about yourself. So how did you get into wine? How do you become a winemaker?
I moved back east from Montana, and I got a job at Millbrook Winery just to have a job, you know, just something to do right when I got back. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And working there, this is 2001, they not only make New York wine, but they also have an estate in Tuscany, they have a destination rally, and vineyards down by Monterey. So kind of opened the wine world up to me, and I was tasting the New York wines and the Italian wines and all of them together, and it kind of, I don't know, something happened, and I was inspired to get into the wine business, you know, which I didn't realize you kind of have to be a little bit crazy. I never thought I was crazy. I didn't think I was at that point. You know, and everyone who's involved in the business either does it because they have a passion for it, or, you know, they're not necessarily money. I mean, I don't know anybody in the wine business is doing it for the money.
Oh, you know what the old joke is, right?
I know the old adage, yes.
The old adage.
You start with a million.
You need to how to get a million, start with five.
But, and so from there, I started at Ben Marl. I went from a tasting room manager at Millbrook to Ben Marl Winery, where they were an assistant winemaker. Ben Marl has kind of a history in the East Coast. I started in the late 60s. They are far more than licensed number one. This is the Miller family back in the day. And so I was trained by Eric Miller, who lived in France. And they just kind of threw me into the mix, and next thing you know, the winery was for sale, and I was thrust into the winemaking position. You know, all of a sudden, that started. I wasn't ready for it, and I pretended like I knew what I was doing.
Make it till you make it.
Yeah,
right?
Yep. So we're here for a little while, and then decided I have to go to Washington State to round out my experience at a bigger wine region. And the Spaccarellis who purchased Ben Marl from the Millers, are the owners of Ben Marl. It's a very successful wine. It's really good for them. And so Washington State, I work for Sonora Winery. San Michelle, and I got that big experience of the big out west experience. So, you might be the California for that. It's really Washington State. Came back, and Robibero needed to start. Robibero is in Garden, New York, so I started them up. Started making wine for them, kind of helped them put in vineyards. Had a great time with them, still having a great time with them. Family run place, amazing place.
And then, of course, Rory falls into the picture because they're winemaker, and we get somebody to pinch at harvest.
Oh my God!
So wonderful left at harvest, and I came in to I'm here. And then stayed with the Glories. They're a wonderful couple, Doug and Muriel, and they have beautiful property.
Yes,
yeah, so like a nightmare thing for most wineries.
Yeah.
So it's got to fit in the
So now all of your education is hands-on?
Well, there was a point where at Benoit, Eric Miller, the owner, said, okay, well, we need to go back to school and take some classes. So I did go back for a lot of chemistry and organic chemistry. So I was working at that winery, and I took a bunch of organic classes. Before that, I was like a natural resource management major, so it wasn't nothing to do with wine. All hands-on, and I think that's probably the best way to learn to make wine. And it doesn't hurt to have a science background or a degree. But, yeah, this was 2001, you know, in the Hudson Valley, so there wasn't a lot of UC Davis graduates floating around.
Every vintage, you learn something new. No matter how much book knowledge you know, every vintage, something happens and you learn something new, right?
Yeah, and
better or worse.
I remember most of the chemistry, but you know, you don't remember all the details from when you're in school. So, but it is very applicable. I think in the Hudson Valley, you have to be willing to do everything to make it work. It's a different industry than California. You have the winemaker. Assistant winemaker and the assistant to the assistant winemaker, and then a whole bunch of underlings that know just as much as the winemaker, but they're working in the cellar, you know. So it's out here, it's like I'm the vineyard manager at the Ribro, and I'm like the wine, work in the tasting room, and, you know, whatever needs to be done. So sometimes when you come to a tasting room, I'll give you a tasting, kind of an intimate experience. The Hudson Valley has that going for it. It's never going to be a wine region like California. It's never going to be a big industry like that. But it is right near New York City, and it provides an excellent opportunity for educating the people who've never been to a wine region. So, if you live in New York, you're going to go out west, come to the Hudson Valley first, and, you know, get that experience, and then you go to the big time, you know.
But you know what? It's not always about the big time. You know, sometimes it's all about the team. It's all about the personal contact. And that's one of the things we love about Paso is you walk into a tasting room like 99% of the time you're talking to the.
So I think that is something that is heartwarming about the Hudson Valley, is that, you know, you are small in the big picture of things.
Well, tell me about your Cab Franc.
Cab Franc, let's see. I make Marlboro Cab Franc. So we're in Marlboro. I'm standing in Marlboro right now. It's near the river. It produces a medium-bodied Cab Franc, really soft, not heavy tannins, not super high acid, but just sort of a delightful experience with Cab Franc. Like super earthy, nice cherry fruit. I call it like almost the Pinot Noir of Cab Franc. It's not as aggressive as what comes from where I work in Garden, which is about 20 minutes northeast of here, northwest. There's more heavy clay and shale, and you get a darker, more tannic Cab Franc, a little more aggressive from our vineyard there. So you have these two very different styles. And when I make the wine at the different places, I do make them in a different style. So the Rory Cab Franc here in Marlboro tastes immensely different from the wine. Remember, I'm trying to bring two different styles into play. And you know, both places are really good for Cab Franc. Marlboro's a little warmer, so you have more farms here. And out in Gardner, you know, we're closer to New Paltz, it's a college town, so you get a little bit more traffic from that. Get more of a kind of like crowd that wants to have fun out there. so we're trying to deliver really good wine and fun. And here in Marlboro, we have a lot of serious farmers. It's a different story than over there. So everybody, there's apple-growing families that go back three generations. So people are serious about their farming here. And you get some serious winemaking and great growing.
So compare your winemaking process between the two wineries. Are you basically looking at the same Brix levels to harvest at, or are they different? What about the barrel program?
Doug Flory here in Marlboro, he likes to use all American. And so that's his decision on that part. And I actually have liked what he does. I use French oak over. The fruit is macerated for about 7 days, and we grow albedo juice. So here we don't make any rosé, and rubro I'll take 20% away, so you'll get a small ratio of juice to skin. So some of the aggressiveness is also coming from that. So we're using all brand new French oak at rubro and American. The two styles, once again, Rubro being tannic, dark, and deeper, and the one here being soft and really enjoyable of use, but age worthy. I like both of these styles.
And is one, so is the Rubro more food? Would you say that one more food?
More food and definitely needs more age. It's not so approachable at you. And some of the wines, you know, I taste them and I'm like, the first one I made, I was a little worried about it. I'm like, this is really earthy and funky. I don't know where this is going. And then 18 months went by in the barrel and I was like, it really came alive. So it took some time for it to find its own. And I think the Marlboro Cab Francs are really ready. They're ready to get more age.
And is either winery, you know, I am, you know, Cab Franc Day, this is what we're all about, Cab Franc. Are you guys going to be doing anything special for Cab Franc Day?
Is today Cab Franc Day?
No, today is not Cab Franc Day. December 4th is Cab Franc Day. Basically because I hate holidays that rotate, so I chose a holiday that was set in stone. So December 4th is Cardinal Richelieu's anniversary of his death, so the father of Cab Franc.
Was it that day last year?
Yeah, it's been that day since I created it 4 years ago.
I didn't know that was Cab Franc, but now I do. So I'm going to do something special.
Okay.
Because sometimes when you're not always in the front of the house or the marketing person, you don't know the special days as much as if you were in the tasting room.
Right. We will send out, I sent out an email in October-ish.
I know Glory did something.
Yes, they did. They did it 2 years ago, I believe. I think something happened this year that they did it. Maybe they didn't remember. There were like 22 wineries that I promoted, so my brand has been a fry.
But now that Rubro is part of the coalition, which they were last year, we'll probably, you know, put ourselves out and get something going, because December 4th is quiet and, you know, you want to bring people in somehow.
I like hearing that. Bring people in, drink Cab Franc, celebrate.
It's December, it's cool. Red wine.
Not perfect.
That's the time of year to drink red wine. Rosé and white season's over, so it's...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this year, I'm going all out.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that. So if I don't see anything for Cab Franc Day, I'm going to come up here and you're going to have to do it.
Promise you.
All right. And so lastly, how can listeners find Rubro and Glory Farm online?
Rubro is rnewyorkwine.com, and you can order online or come to the tasting room. We're in various restaurants and shops here, but the best way is to come to the winery.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you. Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco was on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokes dog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year. Your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank. So now I'm with Mike Speccarelli of Benmoral Winery. So we have actually met before because I visited your winery, and I have to say it was one of, besides the wine being very good, the pizza is really good. Was that your father?
No, my uncle.
Your uncle, yep. Who was back there making pizza and did not let me have an empty plate. Every time I had like one bite left, he was there giving me another slice. Yes. So very, very nice. So tell us about Benmoral Winery, a little bit about the history.
Yeah, so we hold farm winery license number one. So we are, the old owner, Mark Miller, pioneered the farm winery license. We have about 8 acres planted right now, 3 acres of Cabernet Franc, a couple other varietals. We're constantly trying to replant. Some of the history about Benmoral, you know, it dates back to the 50s, the winery. And it was always, you know, famous for our bottling line. Cabernet Franc. Just planted 3 acres of Cabernet Franc in 2016. It's making a really nice wine. We had our first vintage in 2018. And it's coming out really nice.
So, I'm sorry, did you say, tell me how many acres?
We have about 8 to 9 acres planted.
Of Cap Franc, or that's
Total, that's just on our estate. And then we manage about 45 acres in the Hudson Valley planted. Between us and Fjord Vineyards, which Fjord Vineyards is our winemaker owns Fjord Vineyards, but we're all part of the same family. We have probably close to 10 acres of Cap Franc in the valley planted.
Is there a specific clone that works well here? Do you know that?
We're kind of sorting that out right now. We have many different samples. We're actually planting 2 more acres of Cabernet Franc on my dad's vineyard right now. And it's a new clone. I don't know the exact clone varietal, but we're kind of doing some trials. You know, we're doing trials on ourselves because it's a fairly new varietal for the valley. There's only a couple of vineyards planted that I have prior to 10 years. We're sorting it out.
What about Cab Franc do you think is why the Hudson Valley Coalition decided this is going to be our grape?
I just think it's it tastes different. As far as anywhere else in the world, very similar to like a French style. I think our climate here, with the Hudson River, it's a moderate climate and it works well with Cab Franc. Especially the soil types, most of it's very slaty. This area was carved out by the glaciers, hundreds of thousands of years ago, and I think it's nice. Very, very slaty, as you can see, if you look around. I think you get the slate from the Cab Franc. I think it picks it up very well. But I think it's nice. If you can pick out the same characteristics in everyone's Cab Franc, I feel like done in the same style. But we'll see how it goes. We're definitely planting a lot more, and we're definitely doing trials. And I think in 10 years it'll be known.
So the Hudson Valley's terroir is coming through.
Oh yeah, and it shines with Cab Franc more than anything else, I think, because it is such a different varietal. You get that green apple, green pepper to it. It's gonna shine, I think.
So you would say that the Hudson Valley's Cab Franc is very Chenon like?
Yes, definitely. I completely agree. And I think that if you ask anyone, that's pretty much what they're going for. And I think that style too is what they're kind of like aiming for as well. I think it's working out.
So how long has your family owned Benmoral?
So that 13, 14 years. And we went through, I think that about 13 years ago, the case production was right around 1,100, 1,200 cases a year. And now we're upwards of 7,500 cases. And plantings as well, you know, there's probably only about 2 acres planted. And now we're managing right around 45.
That's a pretty big jump in not a very long time period.
Yeah, yeah, and we're trying to increase our Hudson River region, you know, acreage and, you know, quantities. So we're right around 50% of our tasting menu, our wines produced, is Hudson River region. And we're always trying to, we're trying to increase that, but our business is increasing. So it's hard to kind of like, we've just been like floating at that 50% and with all these plantings and everything. So hopefully in, you know, 5-10 years, we would love to be, you know, like just more, you know, more of Hudson River region oriented. But we do have to outsource stuff, and we outsource stuff just from New York and Finger Lakes and Norfolk alone.
Okay. Is there any rule of, you know, like
AVAs? Yeah, so AVA, there's rules here in New York. We abide by very strict rules. If something's like 10%, here, 20% there, we'll put New York on the bottle. Say if we have, we make multiple different Cabernet Francs. We did about 16 tons of Cab Franc from Finger Lakes, and we do just a strictly Finger Lakes Cabernet Franc. And then we have our estate Cab Franc, and we label that, like, if our estate Cab Franc is 100% estate Cab Franc, we label it Hudson River region. So we are, like, we really are strict with that.
So the Hudson River region is an AVA?
Yes, yes. Okay. We would like to, and it's been in the talks to kind of, like, carve out maybe Marlboro as an AVA. We do have, like, we have a lot of vineyards in Marlboro, like very high concentration of wineries. So we're going to try to maybe make Marlboro like California. Like, California is like Stag's Leap District, like kind of very small areas, and we're trying to kind of figure that out. So we would like to do that.
Do you think that would be a sub-AVA?
Yes, yes, 100%.
Okay. And so you were mentioning that you make, you said 3 different Cab Francs?
Yes. We blend Cab Franc, we make a straight estate Cab Franc, then we make a Finger Lakes Cab Franc, and then we make a Finger Lakes Cab Franc Petion, so Petnat. That was very different, very nice.
Very, very unique.
It was kind of done in like a rosé style, so only on the skins for a very short period of time. Currently sold out already.
Petnat has become like this trend. You know, I don't know if it's really a trend or not, but I don't know what has happened, and I'm not saying anything bad about Pet Nat, but it's just all of a sudden Pet Nat is everywhere.
It's trendy right now, and then it's trendy. It's easy drinking. You know, it's good. You know, brunch wine, appetizer wine, and you see now like a lot of New York wineries are picking up on it too. And it's because it makes a nice, it's a cool, interesting wine to bring to a party, you know, share with friends, because you don't see them too often.
Yeah, a lot of California wines.
Oh, they are. Cool.
It's
okay.
Like hippie capital.
Yeah, very true.
So, for my listeners, can you explain exactly how you go ahead, what makes it a Pet Nat, and how you go ahead making it?
Yeah, so a Pet Nat is an unfermented, like it's a halfway fermented wine. So it has a little bit of a fizz. It's kind of like a home wine maker's wine. You have that. It's not racked very often. You bottle it with some carbonation. It's dirty. It's usually unfined, unfiltered. We kind of like to say it's kind of like raw. It's like that raw stage. You know, we put like a beer cap on it, and it's usually has a tiny hint of sugar, and it's still going through fermentation inside that bottle. The last couple of weeks it's pretty much been bone dry, and it had a really nice concentration of bubbles. But you kind of like, what's great about it is the consumer takes that home, and they can either drink it right away, or they can leave it, and it'll be like a sparkling wine by the time it's done fermenting.
Okay, so that's the main difference between a Pet Nat and a true sparkling or a champagne.
Yeah.
There's no double. There's no second fermentation.
No.
It's the actual first fermentation. It just continues itself
exactly.
In bottle. And there's something I think that customers like about the beer cap. Popping it
it's like a beer cap.
The
beer world like changed completely too, and it's like it's a beer drinker's like wine almost in that sense.
Right. I think it's funny because it really is becoming quite, you can't use the word popular.
Yeah.
You cannot use it, but, you know, it's very, you're
trendy.
Starting to hear, yes, you're starting to hear more and more wineries making a Pet Nat.
That and then the cans too. We've been canning our wine.
Oh, really?
Not Cabernet Franc yet, but maybe in the future. We canned four varietals. We were the first in the Hudson Valley, I think third in New York and seventh in the U.S. to Canada wine. We've been doing it for now a couple of years. It's nice. I mean, that market is just it's growing. You know, we're enlightening a lot of people in our tasting room about it, doing trials, you know, constantly doing trials. And it's cool. We have it's a new market. It's a new market for us, and it's different packaging to sell the wine, get wine, our wine in consumers' hands.
Okay, so you're doing a lot of different things in terms of, as a winery.
Yeah, too much.
a nightmare in terms of statistics, basically.
Yeah, we're also kegging wine as well. It's too much, almost. I only have like two or three full-time employees, and it's a lot. It's a lot on all of our plates, but we're doing a good job, and, you know, we're moving forward, keep trucking along.
So how are you bottling all this? So we have the 18-wheeler mobile bottling line. So do you guys have your own bottling line?
We have our own bottling line. Okay. It does about 24 bottles a minute. It's a GIA bottling line,
okay.
eight spout filler head. And then we have a mobile cannery, and we have a canning line on our property. Kegging line on our property. But we have a mobile cannery that comes in, and it's Ironheart Canning Company, and they come in, they do everything right on our site, which is nice. You don't have to change your label or anything, which just makes it a lot easier. But we do, we do everything in-house. We don't buy any bulk wine at all, and pretty much we only work with New York food for the past, like, 10 years.
And do you use all of your fruit, or do you also sell off? Because you have that farmer's basin.
Yeah, we sell off a little bit, but very, very little bit. We sell some bulk wine, and we help out a couple other wineries in the area. But as far as we use pretty much almost everything on our home site, and then we manage a vineyard in Hudson and Millbrook, about 20 acres between the two, and that's where we sell garden eggs and stuff like that.
So how many places are you
using
about?
Right around 7,500.
So in the Hudson Valley, is that considered a large winery? You know, not the United States, because we have, you know, we
yeah,
have the
ma- hard,
massive
though.
Ones out there. But in the Hudson Valley, are you considered one of the larger ones?
It is. We're medium size. So we're right around like White Cliff area. And Millbrook's doing about probably 15,000. So we're right in the middle, and the Brotherhood's doing like 100,000. So as far as like the Hudson Valley, we're very diverse, just like anywhere in the world. But we're in the medium. Yeah, we're right in the middle, let's say. Yeah, that's good.
So tell me, how can our lovely listeners, how do they find you?
We have a really nice website, just got redone. It's at benmarle.com. We have a very prominent Facebook page. It's Ben Marle Winery. If you're ever in the Hudson Valley, look us up. Beautiful sight.
It is a beautiful sight. That overlook is magnificent.
Thank you.
It really is. On the socials at all?
It's Instagram at Ben Marle Winery. Everything's just pretty much Ben Marle Winery. We don't have a Twitter. It's just Ben Marle Winery on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Okay, excellent.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Nice talking
very
to
nice
you.
Talking
thank
to you.
You. So I'm now here with Nick Bazzo from Mastrano Vineyards, and this is actually, he's the owner of the winery that we are actually at today, celebrating Cab Franc and the Cab Franc Coalition. And I have to first say, this is beautiful.
Thank you.
I love your barn. It is beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Really is. So first, you know, before we were on, you said you do it all. So let's hear a little bit about who you are, what you do.
Okay.
How you got here?
Well, I'm Nick Bazzo, and I'm the owner of Mastrano Vineyards. I am a fourth-generation farmer on the property. This is great-grandfather's property. It was bought in the early 1940s. It was actually a cow pasture and animals at the farm. My great-grandfather and his son, my grandfather, planted apple trees. So a majority of the property was mostly apples. Some stone fruit like peaches, nectarines, blackberries, raspberries. Very small acreage of grapes on the property. My uncle eventually took over the farm, and then kind of like a partnership with him, like my grandfather and his father, I kind of started slowly taking over the farm. Started getting ideas to start planting some wine grapes on the property. So our first planting was in 2010. Which was mostly table grapes. So we started off with some seedless table grapes just to kind of do a little test run, kind of incorporate that into the fruit packing industry that we were kind of in with our apples. So we started off small. We did three varieties, did about an acre and a half. As that kind of grew, we started planting some vernifera. We started planting Riesling. We planted Cabernet Franc, of course. We planted Pinot Noir. We have Concords, Niagaras, Baco Noir. We actually have Pinot Gris on property and some Cabernet Sauvignon. Cabernet Sauvignon is actually going into its third year. Hopefully we'll get a nice little harvest this year. And our Pinot Gris is actually on our second vintage of our Pinot Gris, which is actually working out very well, especially for this kind of area in the Hudson Valley. It's not very well-known grape to be growing here. Something I wanted to try, took a risk, kind of get a nice little reward out of it, and it's been working. So the property is around 100 acres. 20 of it is planted in grapes. The other 20 is apples. Then the rest of the property is, as you can see, our barn, our fields, our wedding venue, our tasting room, some woodland areas, some wetland areas. So
how do you prepare the soil type that you have your orchards on versus what you have your vinifera on?
Well, you know what? Where our vineyards are now, that was apples. So wherever there are vinifera growing, actually any grapes are growing, it's also, it used to be apples, some used to be apples, some where our Riesling were, it used to be peach trees. Actually where our Cabernet Franc is growing, it used to be a very old cider apple or wine sap stamen. So before we actually planted, we kind of pushed everything out. We did nice little cover crops, had Cornell University and Cornell Cooperative come, do some soil samples, and really kind of plot out where certain varieties should be placed. So pretty much through a trial and error, we're kind of figured out what's growing in good locations. We still have some open property, a little bit higher elevation, where we plant some more Cabernet Franc, which I'm excited about. Definitely a little bit safer place to plant, a little bit higher elevation, really nice soil up there. It's kind of been dormant for the last 10 years, so we've been letting it kind of do its thing with the soil. Soil composition in this area, we're doing very well. I mean, besides the giant rocks we have to pull out in New York State, make everything a little bit more difficult. But as of soil and drainage, this is definitely a piece of property that's a farm for a reason. So,
how did we get to Nostrano as a name?
Nostrano. So, that's a weird story. I was actually in California when I saw the word Nostrano. I saw it, we're at a restaurant, we're actually in Napa Valley, and I saw it on a restaurant menu, and I said, where did I hear Nostrano? I'm thinking to myself, I always heard my grandmother say Nostrano, and I never knew what it meant. I never really thought anything. She always said Nostrano this and Nostrano that. She was always talking about homegrown, of our own. So when she would always talk about the garden, through the Italian, I would hear Nostrano, and when I saw the word, it was a Nostrano Supersod or something, and it kind of brought back a weird memory for me, just seeing the word, and then I said it, and it kind of stuck with me. So my wife and I were there, I said, Nostrano, Nostrano, and I kept saying, she's like, what are you saying? So I started kind of doing a little research on it, and I came across a very vague slang Italian word for homegrown or of our own, and it kind of stuck with me. I didn't want to go with the last name that I had. We are Trapani's. My grandfather is a Trapani. This has always been Trapani Farms and family. I just wanted something a little different and something to ask me a question. So it's kind of a conversation starter.
Absolutely.
They always ask me, am I Nick Nostrano? I say, I could be if you want, but I'm not.
You can call me whatever you want.
As long as you buy a bottle, that's it. So, just a weird thing that, a weird family kind of slang term that I always heard that in my future, it came and it kind of stuck.
I like it. So, what did you say was the first vines you planted?
The first vines we planted were three varieties of seedless table grapes. They were Einsetz, Somersetz, and Cannabis. And the only reason I planted those as grapes was because we're in the fruit market, and I knew it was going to be something I could sell. Okay. I could make the profit and possibly see how these grapes are going to grow here. And then I started getting carried away. I started wanting to plant Pinot Noir. Got criticized for planting Pinot Noir. I've been criticized for planting Pinot Gris. So I kind of think outside the box. I tend to not go towards the road that's easy to, more native species of, grapes where a little bit more sustainable, a little bit less manual labor to them. I tend to go from a little bit more of a complicated route, and usually a little bit higher risk, a little bit higher reward, right. Making some nice wines right
higher
now.
Higher the risk, the higher reward.
Right, so, you know, it's, I like to get criticized because, you know, that means you're doing something right, so.
That's absolutely right. All right, so we're here about Cab Franc, though.
Yes, we are.
So tell me about your Cab Franc. Do you know what clone it is? Do you have multiple clones?
I don't know. Oh, God, I don't know. I'm not the guy to ask because that's all my father in the office, but. We're actually switching clones. I know that from we're actually going to a new vineyard, a new nursery to get new clones this year for our new planting. We actually just ripped out a good portion of our Cab Franc due to some winter damage. That was just one small block that we planted in a very low spot, and we've been having trouble. Otherwise, we have a very nice 1.5 acre block that's been growing since 2013. Very mature vines, getting nice mature fruit. So clones, we have several different ones. You know, it's hard to say which ones are growing better at the moment, but right now we're hanging in there, and we're going to be getting some plants from California, actually, in the fall time to plant. So we're trying to switch things up, do a little bit things, see how we can get some different flavors, you know, and definitely kind of trying to work on stable vine. Like I said, you know, in our area, we get this freaky weather. Right now we're outside and it's raining on us while we speak, so a lot of rain. So, you know, we're trying to figure out what's the best option route to go.
So how many Cab Francs do you make?
Right now we have one that we have released, and we have two different ones in barrels right now.
Okay.
The one that we have released is a 2016 100% Cabernet Franc. Nice floral notes, very light in color, very easy drinking wine. We also have another Cab Franc, which is a 2017 in barrels, which is actually kind of wrapped into some of our Merlot barrels, kind of picking up really cool, kind of perfumey, nice fruit flavor, actually adding a nice little dark tone to the wine. I kind of just pulled that wine out of the barrel.
So once used Merlot?
So the barrels that we bottled some of our Merlot, and as we bottled, we needed to make some room for some Cab Franc that we were pressing off, and we pressed right off into the Merlot barrels, and that's what we're actually tasting from our barrel sample today, our 2017.
See, once again, I'm going to say that's going out. That's a different...
Yeah, you know what? Because since we're in the Cab Franc Coalition, we have to be a certain percentage. And you know what? I see nothing wrong with that. Going in some barrels that we bottle out of it, and it really, really picked up some really nice flavors just from going in those barrels right after we bottle. It was a pretty cool idea. Very small. It's about 110 gallons of that. And then otherwise, we just have our 100% Cab Franc 2017, which is also in barrel. So
that's awesome.
So,
and now one last question before we're really
Yeah, that's all right. If I had an Estrano shirt, I could give you.
Oh, thank you. You can only get so wet, right?
Yeah, that's
I mean,
it.
What's your wet? It doesn't matter. So my last question is, what style Cab Franc are you looking for?
Oh, geez, I'm looking for. You know, I couldn't even tell you what style I'm going for. I'm going for my own style. I'm influenced kind of by like the French style of a Cabernet Franc. I've got a little bit of French in my background. You know, I always, whenever I seek out or seek after a Cabernet Franc, to tell you the truth, I always look for a French. I always look for a French one. It's my favorite, and that's kind of where I'm trying to mimic. Maybe it's not possible, but that's when I'm, you know, in my head, when I'm through the making of wine process, that's always in the back of my head, and that's kind of who I am. But a little bit New York,
to make wine that you
right?
Like.
A little bit of a New York kind of twist on it. Still keeping it New York style wine, but I always kind of towards the French Cabernet Franc has always been my favorite for quite some time now. So.
So tell me, how do people find you? Where can they find you?
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Nostrano Vineyards on Instagram, and Facebook is just Nostrano Vineyards. And our email is nostranovineyards@gmail.com, and just check us out on the web. And our tasting room is open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Always have live music, food trucks, always have something cool going on in the weekend. So it's an absolute beautiful view up at the tasting room. It's a great place to be.
Awesome. And now that you are part of the coalition, are you going to be celebrating Cab Franc Day?
Of course.
There you go. That's what I love to hear.
I would rather do more than celebrate Cab Franc Day.
All right. So you can expect my email coming out to you around in October.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Thank you.
Yes. I am now with Yancy Migliori.
Perfect.
of White Cliff Vineyard and Winery. And I actually think that we have spoken in the past at the New York Drinks New York last year. Tell me about, first of all, how did you get into the wine industry? How did you decide to start a winery? How did we get here?
Okay, early history of early White history. Cliff was, I personally married into it because my husband was the guy with the vision and really planned this. You know, it was decades in the making. We're not the kind of classic winery situation where somebody makes a bundle doing, you know, dry cleaning or trucking or baked goods. Yeah, and then spends it on a fun winery. Instead, we've done this very slowly through sweat equity over decades. And he envisioned it as a retirement activity. The joke is, it's the only thing he's ever failed miserably at is retirement, because he is working, you know,
harder
than ever. And he was getting, back when he was getting a master's in chemistry, he was planning what to do with this land he was gradually buying. I mean, really, he's a guy who plans ahead. And he thought about dairy and cheese, and I think I'm glad we landed in wine.
That's a whole other type of retirement there.
yeah. And I mean, I love cheese, but the cows, the, you know, middle of the night getting up to, no, it's not me. So
I love cheese too, but I prefer to just eat it versus trying to make it.
I'm with you. So, he just planned it over decades. We very gradually planted. We figured we took 10 years watching how small plantings did and then planted out more based on how they did. We will totally raise our hands and say, yes, climate change is real, because, the judgments we made early on have, you know, things have shifted and, you know, we're adapting again. And we are now actually in our 20th year.
Wow.
The 4th of July weekend is our official 20th birthday. And so I've been thinking a lot about how to explain what the voyage has been. And I think it can be put into a word, and the word is determination. really.
That's a good word for winery owners. You can't be thin-skinned.
That's right. Like most
like
of the grapes.
Most of the grapes.
Yeah. Now, we've had, like, this current year, it's heartbreaking. The winter damage, the polar vortex from January. We had just major damage. We went to 19 degrees below zero. Really brutal, killing cold. And our new vineyard that we've established as a hedge against the cold weather, there was even cold damage there. So when people joke about climate change, you know, oh, now you can grow, hot climate grapes. No, it's all about wild swings. And we are actually considering planting some Syrah with the idea that, you know, that does have a broad range. It grows in many different places. And, you know, if this does shift towards warmer, it would be a good thing to have in. We've had a, you know, decades-long vision and have continued to just shift and adapt to make things work in the face of several years of devastation from cold. Going back to, 94? In 1994, we had 24 below zero. That's the coldest I ever remember.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I still have mental scars from that.
Yeah, I don't even want to know what that is like.
Yeah, it's not good for grapes, I'll tell you.
No.
The thing that I will never forget was having to put a drop light light bulb under my car to warm up the oil to start the car.
Oh my God. So that's insane. That's insane. And you know what? It's been, I have a friend and I'm horrible with geography. She's in Canada somewhere.
Yeah.
Where they were, like, for a week straight, they were in, like, the negative 20s.
Oh, yeah.
just like, how are you like living this? Like, how do you get on a plane every day?
Yeah. Well, I started today in New York City, and where I grew up. I'm from the city. And it really reminded me how disconnected you are from the weather in most city environments. I had dinner last night with a friend, and I was complaining how the weather to me is feeling more and more end of days. Not to be too grim, but as a farmer, you're really tuned in to how different it is. And this very, very smart woman I was eating with looked at me askance, like, oh, come on, you know? And so I had to really spell it out to her, because when you're in the city, it's like, okay, sometimes my shoes get too wet and this is annoying.
It gets in a puddle.
Yeah. No, last night it was deluges, deluges.
It was nasty last night.
Yeah, yeah. There, here, everywhere. But so, but people don't stitch together those events into the big picture when you're living in an urban environment.
And when you're a farmer, Mother Nature is the ultimate. Like, she can be nice, or she can ruin you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really, as I say, just brute determination that, you know, my husband is not easily fazed. And as we've had these setbacks, he plants different vines. He pulls things up. He puts something else in. You wait 3 years, 4 years. You get a new crop and see how it does in the next cold
see
event.
See if you planted the correct thing 4 years later.
Right, exactly. And, you know, starts a new vineyard. And, I mean, the great news is that as a result of all of that effort, you know, we really set out to make wine that would be taken seriously. And we've had some really huge, satisfying achievements along the way with the setbacks. Probably the biggest ever being some years ago now, in 2010, we entered a Riesling in the San Francisco International Wine Competition, and there were 1,300 white wines entered that year from 27 countries and 28 states, and there were 52 judges, and we won Best White in Show.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, so we beat 1,300 white wines, and that's tasting blind, which makes all the difference, because, you know, if they'd known they were tasting an unknown winery from an unknown region, we wouldn't have won that.
Right. Absolutely. So you had said that you are very in tune with nature, which as a farmer you have to be. So I actually haven't asked anybody else this, but you brought that up. So I don't know what your answer is going to be like, or even if you pay attention to it. So, but the big trend or anti-trend, depending on what side of the fence you are on, is biodynamics. So what's your thought on biodynamics?
I'm just in my mind tying that in with, like, paying attention to the weather and nature on that end. And I guess, yes, that's a lot of what biodynamics are about. But natural wine and biodynamics, to me, one of the biggest things about it is that you're giving up a lot of control. And in a challenging region like this one, we haven't felt like we could afford to do that. You know, again, we were setting out to make wines that were taken seriously in a region that, when we started, was not taken seriously. So the last thing we would have done is, you know, just gone with natural yeast and not used sulfites, you know, and risk secondary fermentations and, you know, bacterial spoilage. And, I mean, biodynamics, as I understand it, and I'm not as an expert in it, it's, strictly speaking, you would be organic. And, well, organic is a little, as I understand it, pretty sort of science-based. And we in New York cannot be fully organic with grapes, because there is, you know, organic, unlike what many people think. It's not that it's no spray. There are many sprays, but they're approved. And there is no approved organic spray for black rot, which is a major issue in New York. because we're in a very damp region. So you cannot be... We know some folks who worked very hard at being organic in New York and finally had to throw in the towel because it was the grapes or the organic, and they chose the grapes. But what I always tell people on our approach to this is that we live in the middle of our vineyard. So we are very mindful and conservative and cautious about everything we do. And in terms of natural wine, and I don't know how much you're interested in that angle, you know, we've given that a lot of thought and really turned our noses up at it for a lot of years, because our experience of natural wines in this country had been funky, weird, unpredictable wines, which was never what we wanted to make. But we went to taste in Alsace in northern France a couple of years ago, and that's the way they make their wines. They don't add commercial yeast. They add, I think, very little in the way of sulfites for protection. They really make the wine seriously in the vineyard. The guy that we talked to in detail had actually, he was a botanist and biologist who had helped to map the Grand Cru vineyards in Alsace, and then turned around and bought some of it and was planted.
Maybe a little inside trading.
Yeah, really knew his stuff. And, you know, I think they achieve beautiful wines with their natural wine technique, because it's much more, it's sort of like slow food, you know, the Italian approach where everything is, you know, you just really take your time, which Americans don't do, so you get these funky, weird wines. The French, they're letting the wine sit in the barrel so long, with so little yeast, you know, and very slow fermentations because it's natural, that, you know, any contaminants are precipitating out, don't make it into the bottle. The grapes themselves are so clean going into the press that, you know, the risks are so much less. So our experience of natural wine there was very inspiring. They were beautiful, clean expressions of the grapes. And we actually are endlessly experimenting, and right now we have a natural Chardonnay and a natural Riesling. Tiny productions. You know, I think it's a barrel of each, but we like to see what we can do.
So we are actually here for Cab Franc. So tell me about your Cab Franc. How many... different types of Cab Franc are you producing? What are the differences between them? What's your case production for Cab Franc?
Okay, we are here pouring 3 Cab Francs, and there's another one that we have in our tasting room, which is New York, rather than Hudson River region. This was Hudson Valley only today. And I think we're moving away from ever buying Cab Franc fruit from other growers, because we planted more, we will have enough. And our choice, we're always happy to buy from other New York growers, but we'd rather work with our own grapes when we can. We have experimented with different clones, with different yeasts. We are pouring 2 2017s, where the basic fermentation approach was the same. I think roughly 12 days fermentation and cold soak, a combination of American and Hungarian oak, but different sites. We have our home vineyard in Gardner, which is a very cold, very flat site, and we have our new vineyard in Hudson, which is right above the Hudson River on a steep slope. Yeah, and they're fairly strikingly different wines. And one of the really exciting things about the Omana Cab Franc is this is a new vineyard established by my husband based on his, you know, 40-plus years of growing experience in the valley. So he's really just poured a lot of expertise into it. And this wine that we're pouring from Omana was produced from second leaf vines, which is very unusual. And it's lovely. They were ready. They were. So it's a young wine from young vines, but it's, you know, where we're heading. He's planning to go from 6 acres to 10 acres there, and, you know, it's just, it's a great site. And then we also have a 2016 we're pouring, which is a reserve. We don't typically pour in the tasting room, but we still have some available for sale. And it was interesting to note there was a different yeast on that. And I was just pouring it for someone here who is sort of a semi-retired winemaker, and that was the one that she was the most impressed with. Couldn't understand why he would have switched the yeasts, but she said this is the sort of wine you would want if you went to for a nice dinner in Paris, and this is the bottle you'd want with it, you know, elegant, refined. So it's a little older. It is the home vineyard. You know, I think more than anything, he just loves the grape. He lets the, you know, wonderful balance of fruit and pepper come through. Another thing that we've actually worked hard with in terms of our treatment of Cab Franc is leaf pulling. All the research that was done at Cornell into how to control the green pepper notes pointed you to stripping leaves that in the fruiting zone shading grapes. And that has really made an impact on our Cab Francs. I, not long ago, tasted a library wine from the year before we started leaf pulling, and it had so much more green pepper to it. It was really...
It's directly related to the sun. Yeah.
Yep.
So tell me, where can people find you? On social media, on the website, how do they get in touch with you?
Okay. Whitecliffwine.com is our website, and yes, we're on Facebook. Find it, you know, with Whitecliff Facebook, and pretty much the same straightforward, the handles, Whitecliff on Instagram, and you could call the tasting room, 845-255-4613. We do ship in New York, and we'll ship to California. We do some shipping, and we are in a lot of stores. It's something that, with our 20 years in the business, we've gotten pretty deep into wholesale. But it's New York City to Albany. We're not in other states. Yeah.
Excellent. So what do you think about Cab Franc being, you know, the coalition's grape variety, and what are you going to do for Cab Franc Day?
Cab Franc Day will probably be a vertical tasting. That's what we tend to do with it. We love the grape. We think it's a great choice for the region. We were very much involved over time in debating this, and we love Sauval Blanc, and we produce our most popular wine as a Sauval Blanc blend. But we know that critics don't respect it, don't write about it. I think they're wrong, but it's a fact. And Cab Franc is, you know, we've been at this long enough. You see trends, ebbs and flows, like, you know, first it was only Chardonnay and Merlot. Now it's, you know, God, no, don't bring Chardonnay and Merlot near me. And Cab Franc is something that's been less known, and now people are becoming more and more intrigued by it, I think. So,
which is wonderful to my ears.
Yeah. So we're really happy to be working with it. And it is not because of the Cab Franc Coalition that we are growing it. We were part of why the region has gone in that direction, because we've been planting it for quite a while. So... wonderful varietal. We love it. Great with food. Great with Italian food. Red sauces. That's a terrific thing for it. So bring it on.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so I am now with Mary Ellen and Doug, and they are from Glory Wine. And
first off, they have been participating in Cab Franc Day from the very beginning. So I am very happy to finally meet you guys in person because, as you said when we first saw each other, a lot of correspondence through email, and it's always nice to, I saw pictures, but it's always nice to meet face to face. So first, tell us about Glory Farm Wine. How did we get into this wonderful world of wine?
So I bought a farm in Marlboro in 1879. I started off growing cattle, pigs, chickens, and rabbits. I worked for IBM for a time. It was a job where I could do both and still earn a living and have fun doing agricultural things. And as we realized over time that this particular site we're on in Marlboro is very conducive to growing fruit. It's close to the Hudson River, whose temperature climate is 400 days. It's been all cellar and eastern exposure, which is great for growing fruit. So I began planting fruit grapevines in 2003, along with peaches, pears, and apples. And that flourished, it kept getting bigger and bigger. Around about 2001.
Before 2001, we finally got rid of the animals. We had enough of the cows escaping. We got tired of just doing animals, so we got rid of the animals and just decided to do fruit.
Right. The cows didn't come back one day. That was a signal.
That was the sign. All right, we'll take that as a signal.
So we had an abundant crop, I'll say, about long. We were unable to sell it. We were satisfied with wineries and winemakers. There wasn't enough to lose that crop, so we went down to a local winery, and we asked that woman in there if we'd make some wine. She did. And some hybrid style grapes. And we brought it home and we offered it to friends and relatives, and they said, well, we would buy this one. So I turned to Mary Ellen and says, they would buy this one. We just have a winery.
So I've got to laugh because that's very similar to my husband and myself. We enjoyed wine. So we decided one day, let's do one of those make wine with us things. And being scientists, we were there geeking out. We were pulling out all of the mog, you know, all the material other than grapes. And we're doing that. And everybody else there is laughing at us and making fun of us. And they're just drunk and dumping their grapes in. And then at the end of the year, at the end of the, you know, when it's all ready, you have a party. And people were like, oh, yours is so much better. Why? Well, because there's not all of that crap in there besides grape. And that's exactly what happened. People were like, I would buy this wine. And there goes the light bulb, you know? And then it's downhill from there. You know? There's no coming back. There is no recovering from that.
I think that was done in conjunction with this area in that time frame seemed to be hit with quite a few hailstorms. Unpredictable events were in case of your features or pears.
Photobomb, hardest working farmers ever.
Well, hi.
Our first winemaker, Ann Reagan.
Oh, well, she's actually with us.
She's the one that you took the grapes to to make the wine that day.
He just was talking wine. About you.
Yes. Oh, back really? In the, how we got started.
Yeah, back in the day.
But she drove a hard deal, though. She bartered with us for a cord of firewood, some baskets of peaches, two flats of raspberries.
I drive a hard bargain.
But what did you think when you got those grapes?
Well, they're always awesome. Like, even everything was awesome. The firewood, the peaches, and the grapes were the best. So to have...
And there were still cows at that point.
No, 2001.
Oh, the cows were gone already. Okay, they were gone already.
So I was at Benmore Winery, and we had some grapes, but we were more of a winery than a vineyard. So I had the opportunity to buy super quality grapes from these guys. It was an opportunity we couldn't pass up.
That's
all I'm
going
to say. Taste
and wine. Back inside. And then she became our
wife. Oh, okay.
We more or less decide, at least not with the growers, if we grow about 15 varieties of grapes. And we, Mary Ellen and I, decide just the kind of grape we want to produce, the variety or the style. And we decide on names, and we ask Christoph to work with us in the blends or the kind of yeast to produce the style we want to achieve. So it's a team effort.
You said you have 13 varieties?
Yes.
Okay. What are your... We're here about Cab Franc, but beside Cab Franc, we'll get back to Cab Franc in a second. But what is, like, your... Is Cab Franc your mainstay? Is that your flagship?
Cab Franc is our signature grape. Okay. Even for our own wine, that's the wine we always tell to our customers. We always familiarize them with that. As they push that. But there are many other wines that are successful. Sauvignon Blanc is a workhorse for us. Because here in the Valley, yes, Cabernet Franc grows well, but it grows through cycles.
I've been hearing that.
This year is one of those cycle years where it's not going to be a good year. So really, if you're growing and successful, you really need to have the hybrids. And the hybrids grow well here. And we know how to produce them so the flavor profile is desired. So we like Sauvignon Blanc, we like Bidal, we use Cayuga, Champagne, Bouchon. These are all good base wines. We can blend them often by themselves. And you can finesse them by, you know, blending a little Chardonnay in the Sauvignon, taking the edge off, or you blend a little Merlot into a Champersin. So they're important components of the whole wine scene. You don't want just to, because vinifera is kind of scary. Good years are fantastic, but off years is a disappointment. But we don't lose our way, we keep trying. Obviously, if you have Cab Franc,
why do you think the coalition has decided what about Cab Franc and the Hudson Valley was decided this is what the coalition is going to name as their green?
Well, we tried doing the Hudson Valley White and Hudson Valley Red about 10 years ago. The Hudson Valley White was Sauvignon-based wine. It makes 25% Sauvignon white. The red wine was the Chardonnay-based. It never really caught on. And we realized that we're looking at other successful regions of the world. So we look at Oregon's Pinot, Long Island's Merlot, Finger Lakes, Riesling. It's all about one grape. So we were trying to do, after the Hudson Valley Red and White, we're trying to do diversity. Let's be famous for diversity.
That doesn't work.
You can't wrap your head around diversity. You got to focus on something, something like that. So Mary Ellen and I, we think Cabernet Franc is the grape to identify, because Molsons are growing. Molsons are making good Cabernet Franc.
We reached out to growers and talked with them about it to find out was there enough support in the region to declare Cabernet Franc as a signature grape and have an organization around it. And there was.
Familiarity with the name also helps. Yeah. So people talk about a lot of that being great possible. And it goes pretty well.
Nobody knows it.
If you can identify with a word like Cabernet, it doesn't matter if something no one's following or Cabernet Franc's following. Cabernet, I know Cabernet.
Right.
I never heard of Franc, but then you get them bleeded in, to taste the Cabernet Franc. So we all, I think, rallied around that. We developed the organization in 2016. We founded the coalition. We started off with legacy members who are members who either grow or buy as a body fruit. Make the wine here to a certain standard, not too complex as a standard, to identify commonality and consistency of our technique. Like tonight with this event, we're just showing that it's a good idea. Wine is enjoying it, people are enjoying it, so we're starting off on a strong note. We've got a long time to go. We get highly successful and well known, but we're on our way.
Well, nothing happens overnight.
Right.
It takes lots of little steps to success. So tell me about the bird.
So we wanted to have some kind of a seal on the bottles. If we're all going to do something together, we wanted to have some symbol that would identify it.
Like the plastic colors.
Exactly. And so we talked about all different kinds of things. We looked at the fish.
The sturgeon,
the Hudson River sturgeon. We looked at grape clusters. We looked at all kinds of things. We really weren't going to do a bird because Cattie Classico's got the rooster.
Right.
But all of our vineyards have hawks. Hawks are in the valley. And so we just started talking about the hawk, and it made sense. The hawks protect our vineyards from nuisance birds, and they're a good thing for us to see out there. So we
we talked about it and we decided let's go with that. So that's where it came from.
That's awesome. Yeah, I knew about the hawk, but I didn't actually know why you guys chose the hawk. Right?
Precisely. Yep. I want that.
So how many cat broncs are you producing?
Well, right now we've got there's two out in the bottle and one in the barrel. There's three right now.
And is how many cases total of cat broncs do you think you produce on a regular? I mean, it varies, but
well, we're one of the smaller producers in the valley. I would say we're only at about 150 cases a year
between the three.
Yeah, between the three. This year we may sell a little more because of more to offer, but I think it's only going to be that much. We're trying to grow, and we're growing this year. We'll sell as much as we can. We'll make it as much as we sell. We won't overproduce it. If we have a year where there's too much coming into the winter, we sell it. We're clamoring for specified cattle farms. It's easy to sell.
And what's your total case production, you say?
We're counting 2,000 cases.
2,000 cases. Is that where you kind of want to be?
It's kind of a sweet spot for us because if we go above that, with our size of our operations, it's going to cost more to get more equipment. So that's a sweet spot for us. We can manage it. It's fun. It's a fun level.
It's a very sweet spot because I think at 2,000, you're big enough to be recognized and big enough to supply the population, but you're small enough that you're keeping your hands
everything.
And you're the ones that are here tonight, not some distributor, not somebody who doesn't really know your wine. I think it's a sweet spot.
That's so fun.
Yes. And that's the important part, right?
That's
Wine should be fun. So tell me, how can people find you? I know you're on Facebook, right? So how else can they find you? And Instagram. Mm-hmm.
We have a website.
Glorywine.com.
Yep.
Okay.
We're Glory Wine on Instagram, and on Facebook it's Glory Farm Winery. But then come to the tasting room. Yeah. We're open Saturdays and Sundays, 11:30 to 5:30.
Okay. Excellent. And when they're at your tasting room, I know a lot of the wineries, they, you know, their seating area, things like that. Can they make it?
So our winery's up on the hillside, right? We're on the hillside. And in the tasting room, you stand and look out the windows at a 35 mile view across the river, down the valley and across the river. Outside, we have some chairs, we have some picnic tables, first come, first serve. Lots of people, especially those who've been to visit us before, will bring a blanket to spread out on the knoll. There's a vineyard outside the tasting room, there's an apple orchard out there. You can sit and enjoy the view, enjoy some wine. A couple years ago, we installed a kinetic wind sculpture that's just therapeutic and soothing to watch. It only takes a 3-mile-an-hour breeze to start it moving, and it's fascinating.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time, and thank you for being such a supporter of Cab Franc Day. You guys really were the first of the Hudson Valley to join and be consistent. Even when you were injured, you were helping out with everything. So each year, it's getting bigger and hopefully, I think, better. And I will be reaching out to you guys again in October when my heyday starts for December 4th.
Well, we want to thank you for your effort also.
Yeah.
One woman show, and we do appreciate your efforts. I know it takes a lot of your time away from your business. So we do appreciate your efforts, as we see from Cali Farm Coalition, and you're spending time on the coalition, and spending your wine. So I know it's a sacrifice, but I tell you, it's a
labor of love.
Yes, it is. Cab Franc. We all have to stick together.
More than a blending grape.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah! More than a blending grape. So yes, thank you very much. Okay. Thank you.
This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, sláinte.